Welcome to Crosstides, where stories, ideas, and perspectives flow beyond borders. Each episode, we engage in conversations with people from different backgrounds, exploring diverse topics and the experiences that shape us. Whether you're here to learn, challenge your views, or simply enjoy meaningful discussions, you're in the right place. So, let's ride the tides of thought and see where the current takes us. This is Crosstides. Let's begin.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome once more to an episode of your podcast, Crosstides, where we have conversations that go beyond borders. And I would just like to thank everyone that is once more with another episode. And as always, thanking those that has been tuning in to previous episodes and letting me know via social media that they enjoy it. I really appreciate it a lot. And as always, be prepared because more episodes coming soon. And as we begin this new episode, I am here joined with a very special guest. So some people call her Purple Girl, so call her Happy Latina. I personally consider her to be somebody that I'm inspired by the work she's doing. That's no one else but my friend Avril, who is joining us here from South America. Avril, how are you doing?
Hi! Thank you for having me today. I am so excited. First of all, to practice my English. Second, for the invitation, of course. I love the idea of this podcast, by the way. Congratulations for the initiative, because I feel like it's very inspiring. It literally crosses borders, and it's giving us a shot to show about our context, our reality, and what people do with their stories and how we shape society and culture as well. But yeah, as you said, hi everyone, nice meeting you, hola, all the way from Bolivia. Oh, Bolivia! I'm
Bolivia.
Avril, or yeah, viva Bolivia! I'm Avril, or Avril in Spanish, and also people know me as Eñame on social media. I'm an audiovisual communicator, and I specialize in gender media. What else I can say? I'm a feminist digital activist, and I advocate for authenticity, gender equality, and I believe in the beauty of being yourself and changing the world together. Hey, Eñame!
I love that. Well, Avril? Avril? So Avril is, in what language would it be your name, the way your name is written?
Oh, well, actually, my name, it's in French. I don't even know how to pronounce that. Please don't ask me that. But what I like about my name, actually, is that it's like, you know, it can have multiple accents or like pronunciations. So like Avril would be in Spanish. Avril would be in British English. Avril would be in, how they call it, American or from the USA. And even in Indonesian, I heard that it was Avril. So like, I like that. I don't mind when they call me in their contexts, or Eñame, as people know me online as well. So yeah, nice to meet you all. I'm so excited.
Okay, excellent. Well, I will say Avril then, which is, I'm more familiar with the pronunciation. So we are colleagues, and we were speaking about this before we started recording the podcast, because both of us did our undergrad studies in education. So there's gonna be a lot of talking here on this podcast today.
We like to talk.
We love to talk. People. And I would just like to ask you to begin with. So you mentioned that you are an activist. So two questions in one. I would like to ask you. The first one I mentioned before, you studied communication, but maybe you can share with us specifically what your education would be, your undergrad and a master as well. And how did your journey in activism?
Okay, nice. So I studied audiovisual communication in university. That's my background. And I guess I started feeling like a huge interest in feminism and gender equality while I was in my sixth sixth semester, yeah, with a topic that I am really passionate about. Actually, I did all my thesis and dissertation regarding this topic, which is called sexual objectification. I don't know if you heard about the phenomenon. And it's something that is very not known because it's normalized, but people don't know about it. Objectification culture is part of where I live. In the tropical side of my country, like beauty and body matters a lot. So like, because it sells, it's everywhere in the media, like, you know, in advertisements, how they call it. And also everywhere, like, you know, in every narrative, in songs, in Latin American music, especially. So it's a lot. And objectification, for those who don't know, and I like to explain it in simple words, is pretty much this process of dehumanizing a person, especially a woman, into her body or her appearance and sexualizing it. Like, you just matter because of the way you look or because of your body. And in that way, people use it as a strategy to be an object of desire instead of a human because of your qualities or, you know, like, the way you think or your capabilities, you're just like an object of desire. So that is important to mention because that was shaping my story. When I heard about this phenomenon, I said, oh my God, that's what's happening to me, because I used to represent my university in events. I was a presenter, like a TV presenter, a master of ceremonies, and I was actually very proud of doing it. But I started noticing some aspects about me and my male partner, for example, that was presenting with me. Like, if they would pay me for an event, because not all the events were paid, but if I would get the payment, I would have to fulfill some requirements of the way I look, and they would expect me to wear, like, you know, dress, like a specific dress code, heels, like a hairstyle, makeup, that it was sexualizing me, of course, or a specific uniform that couldn't be repeated. That didn't happen for my male partner, and he would save his money. He would just like wash his face and then go to the event and have a lot of time to do many things. Like, whereas me, I was like, you know, like already late and I didn't study or I didn't sleep because I had to study, and I had to prepare myself physically, and I was starting to feel like I wasn't myself. And that was terrible, because for me, like, being myself is really important, but suddenly I had to fit in this standard. And I was like, what's happening? Until I heard about this phenomenon. And I said, this is happening to me, not only because society is asking me to be this way, but also because I am self-objectifying myself. So for me, that was like, you know, the door that opened this whole purple world into my life. And I say purple because not only because I love purple, I'm the purple girl, as you mentioned, but because it's also the color of the feminist revolution here, especially in Latin America. I believe in the world as well, but yeah. Yeah, it was like I put the purple glasses and I could never go back. I was like suddenly waking up before this world that it wasn't only my case. I was discovering that it was also systematic. So that was the moment I got really, really angry at my career and why I chose audiovisual communication to follow this evil path, like, ha, 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 beauty sells, you know, like, let's use women for that. And I was like, what should I do, you know? It took me several years to discover that I was, that I could maybe do something different, because it's difficult to not to follow the path that it's been taught. You know, like people tell you what to do, what mold do you fit in, and how do you break that pattern? So the moment I realized I could do something different and in the process be myself, I chose a different path. And I started using my small Instagram account just to be the change I wanted to see. But of course, like, you know, if you talk about authenticity, that's why I said I promote authenticity. It's not that simple. And it's not as simple. Like, if I'm talking too much, please stop me.
No worries. You're
okay. Okay. Because like when you talk about being yourself, it's not as easy. You have to start asking questions about like who you are, who you truly are, not what society wants from you. What do you want? How do you want to create change and give from what you are, right? So I was like, okay, how do I do this? And I started doing it from my Instagram account, because if you are a presenter and if you're part of like a TV channel, for example, you don't say your own ideas or opinions. You answer to a script and they tell you what to say, what to do. And that's not the idea. I didn't want to be part of that narrative. As every protagonist of her own story, I did that and I decided to use that. And I didn't realize I was going to become this huge boom of, let's say, being an influencer. And I started like realizing that what I was going to say wasn't only resonating with myself or my own story, like, you know, my self-development process, but also it resonated in my friends and their friends, and also like this huge community that started growing. And I felt this huge responsibility of also informing myself properly about this. And that's how I started specializing myself in the intersection of gender representation and the media. That is something new even until now. I'm the first person who actually specialized in this, and that's why I studied gender and media in the University of Sussex, and that's how we both met.
Sussex.
Yeah, and that's how I became an activist. That's the story.
I find it interesting what you mentioned when it comes to how people tends to sexualize women. And I feel like of all of the good things about Latin America, I would say sometimes this is something that culturally is not okay, because there's a lot of music that people enjoy, and we're not going to get down into criticizing any gender or anything like that. But, you know, there's like a lot of genre of music that tends to sexualize women. And this is for both the Hispanic part of our continent and also the Anglo-speaking part as well, because you have a lot of Latin genres that they objectify women. And
yeah,
for instance, even in the Caribbean, there are some genre as well that also sexualize women. And it's interesting to see how, for many of us that lives here in Hispanic or Latin America, we see this as something normal. This is the type of music we listen to in our cars, on the radio station, in the bus, or we're adding it to our playlist on the streaming platform. And how other people from other places tend to see this also is okay, because we normalize it as well. So I think it's actually interesting that realization that you had during your studies process. I guess, you know, a friend once said that somebody that receives a subject or a module in university or school and they're inspired by it is because, you know, it's something. And I find that very, very interesting, and the approach that you're given.
Definitely.
With that being said, you mentioned also about your Instagram, that you're using Instagram to promote activism and all of that. And it caused my attention that the name of your Instagram account, and I'm pretty sure a lot of people have asked you this, is Revolución Eñame. And I know that your nickname, if not mistaken, is also Eñame. So what does Eñame mean for those maybe that doesn't know? I don't know what it means. So I would like to know also.
I love that, honestly. I feel like it wasn't intentional, but of course, when I realized that my digital presence was like growing and it wasn't only meant to be for me at some point, and I wanted to inform like to a broader audience, I was like, okay, what should I name it, you know? And I was like, I want this to be like a revolutionary movement. I want it to be, yeah, with revolution. Like, you know, I love the word a lot because it means, oh my God, the concept is so, I don't know, revolutionary. Well, I don't know how to explain, but I was like, I want that. I don't know if I can create a revolution with the digital world. Back then it was like 2020. So I was like, you know, if you go to the dictionary, revolution actually means this. And I remember the concept itself. And I'm like, it's not exactly that, but I believe in like being you is a revolution. So I wanted to transmit that concept, first of all. And then Enyame. Okay, Enyame, first of all, is not Spanish. It's not any ethnic language from Bolivia. It's not any universal language. It's a unique language I invented myself since I was in high school. I started developing this probably when I was a kid as well, but when I was in university already, people used to call me Enyame because I would, have my language itself. I've always been this weird bug, as we call it in Spanish, bicho raro. So I felt like really inspired by that concept. And that's why Enyame at some point began to be my alter ego, something I could represent as, you know, the beauty of being yourself and changing the world together, especially the first part, because first, my first journey was individual. You know, like you have to be the change you want to see first so that it can create echo. So that's what I did. And then, like, you know, changing the world together, that's the part. So like in this process, I was like, how can I do this? And I created this animated character that's Enyame. That's me and how I perceive myself. So she has like these two bonds that I usually wear online as well, that because it's part of who I am, not only my brand. Like these two bonds is like an alien, like a weirdo, you know, like a bug. It's purple. It has hobbit ears because I love Lord of the Rings, and it looks like a cat because, yeah, I love cats. Yeah. So I love animals, but yeah, I love cats. So Enyame is this alter ego, and also my animated character online, and it represents the philosophy behind Revolución Enyame, which is the beauty of being yourself and changing the world together. So yeah, that's why. And like at the beginning, like people don't remember Enyame, but they say that's weird, and they start like wondering, you know, I want to know more. And then eventually people that like talk to me often, they are like Enyame, it's in their brains. And because we play it, especially in Spanish, like, you know, I call my community Enyamorcitas because we're mostly girls and women. Like we can play with Enyamecita, Enyamoso, Enyamístico. So it plays around. And even when I was in the UK, people would start like playing with Enyamizing yourself and, you know, like the Enyame effect and all this stuff. And it creates this whole universe that I like, because I believe that I also live in a different world, so it's good for dissociation also. But to find your own truth and authenticity while you question the world and find your place in this, in life, what you want to give and who you are, especially that. So it plays a lot with authenticity and how you can give to the world from what you are. So like, I feel like I've created this whole new world and perspective where we can address heavy taboo topics, but from a fun aspect that can be positive and, why not, tender, because my approach is radical tenderness. So that's what I do. I don't want to be, I believe all emotions are amazing and necessary for any change, any personal or collective change. But at some point, if we don't want to be part of this hate speech or negativity in the world that already exists, at some point we need to resignify those wounds and those protests, because we can analyze and be critical and reflect on many aspects, but we also have to give solutions, and why not hope? So that's why I believe, and that's what I did by resignifying my own story and what I would protest around my career, around activism itself, around education that can be sometimes technical. And I was like, why not? I'm going to be this bridge, and we're going to do it with radical tenderness and positivity, and also expressing what I believe and what I see from life and myself, like my personality as well, reflected on that. So I feel like it's something unique, and the world deserves to know this message, not because I want to impose something, but because I want you to find your own freedom and your authenticity, your unique path to be yourself and changing the world together by being genuine, you know?
By being yourself. So
exactly.
I'm glad that you have answered that. I have always wondered, actually, that whenever I see Enyame, you use this a lot on social media. I'm like, I wonder if this is a word from some indigenous language from... Today I know it's not. It's a word from Avril. That's your word. And I'm pretty sure maybe in a few years from now, if you can at least get more than 500,000 people, this word is going to be part of the Real Academia dictionary. And for those that doesn't know, the RAE is the academy that which is based in Madrid, Spain, that adds words to the dictionary in Spanish. So probably they would.
I would love that.
To add this word to the dictionary. I mean, if they did it with Twitter, if they did it with Facebooking or Facebookiando in Spanish, I think Eñame should be part of the dictionary.
Well, has potential, right?
Yeah, it has potential. I think it has a powerful meaning, actually. And I'm curious to know, for like those that are non-Spanish speaker, how do they pronounce it? Like, have you ever come across anybody that they pronounce, like, it's hard for them to pronounce the N, which is that little N.
Exactly.
Mustache on top, as I like to call it. Like, how like, you find anybody that is pronouncing
yes.
Eñame, I don't know, like, say something like that.
Yeah, they say like Eñame because in Instagram, like, they don't allow our Ñ, so like it's Revolución Eñame on Instagram if you check. So that's the first instinct when they pronounce it, but also they say Eñame. So yeah, Eñame, which is like pretty similar to Eñame. So like I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. Like I'm pretty flexible with Avril as well, same case. But as long as they understand what it represents or they start like feeling that it's catchy, because I like that, you know, like they play with it and they suddenly they are singing in Eñame. And I love that because I all the time say Eñame. If I don't remember the lyrics of a song, I start like, you know, Eñame, 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 you know, and people start doing that. Sure. And I'm like, okay, I like that. Yeah,
you're putting the communication skills there. You're just spreading the message, so that's good.
If you don't tell me that's influencing, I don't know what it is.
I don't know. That's definitely is. And also, I've been seeing like some of the posts on your of course your personal Instagram and also on Revolución Eñame Instagram as well. And I have to say, I really like the illustrations that that you here. And my question then would: are you personally the one doing those illustrations? And maybe those that are not familiar with your Instagram page as a Revolución Eñame, you can talk a little bit about what is it exactly that you post there? Because you mentioned that there is this this character here, but how does the story goes? Is it a chronological thing, or is it just different topics in different moments? Maybe you can share a little bit about.
Yeah, sure. I think you asked me about that, and I completely forgot to answer that question. ADHD, what are you doing to me? But yeah, thank you for asking again. And yeah. Okay. I'm not sure how to respond to this, but let's see. First of all, I remember that I had this idea of, like, you know, using Eñame as a character. But at the beginning, I didn't know how to, because, you know, you self-sabotage yourself. You're like, I don't know how to animate a character. How do I do this? I don't know if I know about illustration. Like, I am only myself. I don't have a team. Even until now, it's only me who, like, you know, creates the content and design the things. So, but I realized something, and that's so beautiful, not only about activism, but the content creation, is that you grow while you do things. Like, most people believe that you have to be perfect to start something like a project, but you learn on the way. And that's what I did. And actually, I remember so many things about my childhood. For example, you start connecting with your inner kid and remember that when I was a kid, for example, when I was a girl, I used to draw a lot. Who told me that I didn't know how to draw? So then, like, I started doing that, and that's how Eñame appeared. And at the beginning, I can show you the first video I had. It was like for an application for this beautiful network of content creators that now I'm part of. Like, there was this open call about feminist content creation, and I was like, that's the first step I wanna take, because I wanna go deep in activism, but I don't know how to be a cyber activist. So I applied to this, and I remember I used Canva, which, by the way, I use until now. Canva can help you a lot. And I draw Enyame as not as the way I designed it. Like, it was a very simple drawing, and I used it like small frames, and I used how do you say, like, the voice of Enyame, like dubbing. I think it's dubbing, right? The correct word. So like, it was about teenage pregnancy, and I did that, and I was like talking about how teenage girls they start, like, you know, this process, and sometimes it happens to them when they are 13, 15 years old. And I used Enyame to say like, oh, but I can barely with myself, la la la, and she was like, you know, shaking, and I would move like the drawing like that. That was the first video of Enyame, and that's how it turned into life. And then I applied to this program that actually taught me about animation and illustration better. And that's how Enyame appeared in better quality, better animation. But of course, that was a long way, because I realized that for animating something, like, let's say 3 seconds took me like 3 weeks. And that's not that's not sustainable for content creation. Come on.
You got to continue posting every day, every week. The algorithm is asking you to.
And that's the thing. Even until now, I'm not an algorithm person, because I believe we're humans, right? And if we're in social media, I want to break this concept about being aesthetic online, or, you know, being part of the algorithm that pushes you to post 3 times per day and do it consistently. I'm not a constant person. And also, I'm neurodivergent. So imagine that. It's like, I can't. And also, I have to live, you know, if I don't live the experience, I can't share it to you, because that would be not part of who I am. If I don't reflect on my topic first, I don't want to show it online, because that would be fake. And authenticity goes first. So for me, something that I do, I don't have like a chronology in that, answering your question. I post what I feel, or if something happens, I do it from my heart. But if that affects me in the way, for example, my mental health, or I'm not good emotionally because something personal happened, I don't do it, and I do it later. So like, for me, it's important. For example, what I did in the UK, and I haven't posted many things from my UK life or what's been happening now in my life, is because I have to live it first. I have to grow first, and then I can post it. But of course, the moment I started growing, I started having these big campaigns with institutions, because they would look for me, like, to talk about sexual and reproductive rights, sexual violence prevention, gender-based violence prevention. So like, all these topics, and I would address them from a perspective I had, or I saw that people had, and to create empathy or safe spaces. And that's what I do. With colors, of course, with edutainment, like, which means education, with entertainment, with illustrations. Sometimes I use Enyame, sometimes I don't. Lately, I haven't been doing it. But now, with the fantastic world of AI, maybe I'm going to be back with, you know, like, animating and illustrating Enyame the way I can now. Because why not using these beautiful tools for change, right? But yeah, that's how Enyame operates. But sometimes I talk about authenticity, as I said, that goes along with topics like self-love and self-development, self-acceptance, body neutrality, body acceptance about all. And those topics that are considered to be superficial, those are the topics that I started addressing, because, you know, feminism is not yet a well-accepted topic, at least in my context. I have a better hope for Latin America. There are some other cities and countries that are more open to this, but in my context in Bolivia, especially in the tropical side where beauty matters, is kind of difficult to do it. So I started addressing these topics, and then I realized that it was connected to broader ones, like the ones I mentioned, you know, like human rights, gender justice, and sexual and reproductive rights, you know, even affective education, the way you relate with romance, and, like, you know, the way you connect with people, the famous red flags, and, you know, like, healthy self-esteem, which, by the way, it's not that I say that I'm perfect. I've been learning about this along the way, and along with people as well, because I'm not alone in this, even though this is not a team of more people. this is a huge community. It became like a movement where I started, you know, like summoning friends, doing workshops, connecting with people. And while I was doing my activism, I also connected with you and other global leaders, so I could know about more perspectives, citizens, like, you know, students and friends worldwide, global leaders, people that would give me their perspectives, and you create more empathy for reality. And that's how you create content. And but mostly what I do is like talk about changing the narrative and questioning some topics with love and reflection, of course, like the topic I was we were talking about, like, you know, the music. And I remember that was a huge campaign that I started because of three posts and interactions and stories, but because it was a paper, a homework I had for Sussex, one of my models that was called Activist Media Practice. And I did that, and it grew, and it became this Latin American movement that like started being, like, we created this change.org petition to the music industry to tell, like, you know, we're not criticizing this type of music. We're not criticizing people that listen to reggaeton or other Latin genres, because we all track that, and that's popular, that's part of the mainstream media. But also we know there are other artists and lyrics that are changing the narrative, and we want them to be trending topics as well. Or let's, you know, create this collaborative playlist, and let's do this to offer some other options to the world, because we don't only talk about, like, you know, this representation of sexualized women or objectification. We also talk about love, self-esteem, companionships, body acceptance, and like empowerment, social change, so many things. So why not showing in the digital world that there are other options, and that you can also be a creator, you can also create new stories, you can also tell your story, and like in that way representation grows and matters, right? So like it's so beautiful and powerful, and that's what I do in Revolución en Ñame.
I just think it's amazing, because it's a topic that people hardly talks about, and the approach that you're giving using social media, which is what everybody is on, because, you know, back in the days, I remember when I was growing up, was part of different organizations, and I remember this specific one right now, where we were taught about sexual and reproductive health and topic related around that, and back then. This was a few years ago, not that old, but this is a few years ago. I remember that the focus was always through radio, it was always through the television, it was always social media wasn't really the space where they were trying to reach people. So the fact that you're doing this and you're using social media, and that you're actually reaching to a lot of people, because you saw me, I was on my comment a while ago, but I actually went to the profile of Ñame, and I was looking, and you're almost at 20,000 followers. And that's quite impressive. I mean, the colors you use, the designs, it's quite, I would say, of course, a lot of purple, but there's also a lot of color that also represents Latin America. You know, we're a colorful continent, so it makes it very attractive. And I think that it's good that you're using this platform, because I think apart from Instagram, you're also on other social media as well, like Facebook. I think I saw it as well. But
oh, true, still up.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook, I most people are not really using it anymore. These people that I know, I guess, were used the same, like Instagram. Or TikTok is where everybody is at right now. And I also find it interesting something you said about the algorithm. Because most people nowadays, content creator or influencer, which people tend to confuse and think that both are the same, but they are not, they tend to go according to the trend. They try to go along with the algorithm. And the fact that you mentioned that for you need to live the experience first. I think it's quite interesting, because you're telling your story and you're sharing this with people in the most creative way possible. And as I can see, a lot of people are identifying themselves with this, and I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people are being inspired by this, and there's like a lot of change that you're creating by this, not only in Bolivia, but I'm pretty sure beyond that as well. And
thank you.
And I can see the fruit of what you're doing, because of course I saw that you were at the UN a few weeks ago.
Ah,
I saw
hey.
That it was in Geneva, right? I think that's where you were. Tell me a little bit about that. What were you doing in Geneva? I saw that you were at an event at the UN. You were there with other activists as well, with other young activists. How is Geneva? How was the weather when you were there?
Oh my God, it was beautiful. Okay. First of all, I need to give some context because I want to reply to what you said earlier. I lost the topic. No. Sorry, no, but I was like, getting excited, but I didn't want to interrupt yourself because, first of all, I don't have TikTok. I should have, and I want to create that. But for me, it's like, really difficult to keep up with the rhythm again of algorithm, and sometimes it feels like a lot of pressure, so I sometimes don't post. I'm not consistent, as many people say that you have to do, and that's why it's been like a huge challenge for me to grow my account. Like, you know, I feel very proud about the community we have, not only for Bolivia, but also for the Hispanic world. So many people like from Spanish-speaking countries, they follow me, and I really appreciate that. But it's good to mention that also many people stop following me. Like, I lose the quantity of followers I lose every day. It's like huge. And you know, like in the gap of while I was in the UK with you, like for 1 year and a half, I lost like almost 2,000 followers. No, sorry, 5,000 followers. And it was like for different reasons, of course, but it's challenging. Like, you know, if you want to show the message online in the digital world, you have to keep up with these rules that I don't believe we should. So I'm trying to show the world that it's something different. And also this other concept that you said that is different, because like the word influencer, I want to challenge that, because sometimes it's like commercialized. You know, it has this commercialized concept about brands, and you know, like I don't have anything against that, but there are some things that have to go with your own ethics. You know, if it's damaging, how can you promote that? Especially if like, you know, imagine me promoting a brand that objectifies women. Like it doesn't make sense at all.
So according to your values, like it has to align with your values.
For me, yes, content creation and influencing has to have like a bigger purpose, right? Like, it's not only about you, because you need to feel responsible for the people, that the huge community that are following you. And I want to highlight that because it's important. If content creators and influencers, they are following this conversation, this is important. Not because like, you know, you have to do that. I know there's a lot of pressure, but many people, especially kids and teenagers, are listening to you. So it's important. So that's what I felt. And I want to resignify this, because I consider myself as an influencer, but in the way that you can be a change maker, or as we say in Spanish, agentes de cambio, because it should be linked with that. And of course, like there's a difference when you are an activist, for example, but change maker should go along the concept of influencer. And by that, I also want to break the concept that like people can also be influencers of their surroundings. They don't need the digital world to that. Like, you can be an influencer by just speaking with someone in your family, by having a conversation with your friends in the table. You can mention something, you can say something about, like, you can speak up about something. Like, there are many ways where you can influence people for the better, or create an eco just by being yourself. That's what I mean. And you don't need to be a content creator or have like a huge following for that. I wanted to emphasize that as well. And that's what I believe. That's why I, you know, the way you've seen me posting in my personal account, I only have like, I don't know, 1,500 followers. And all of the followers I have in my personal account, I personally know them. And I'm proud of that, because that means, yeah, and it's relatively new. And I personally met those people because of activism, or because I'm a sociable person. But like, what I mean is that that's influencing. not because you impose people something, because we connect with them. And I feel like that's the bigger evidence for that. And I try to implement that to Instagram. I don't know how to apply that to TikTok. If you guys have tips for that, please help me. But I don't
leave it in the comments.
I used to have a TikTok, by the way. It's Avril Bolivia, but it and I used it because I traveled to Indonesia. And random fact about me is that I became viral in Indonesia because of an event. Yeah, so I was like Revolución en Llamas suddenly became Avril Bolivia, so that they could follow me. And now I have like only Indonesian followers. Thank you to the people who follow.
Shout
me.
Out to Indonesia.
Terima kasih. But yeah, that's the weird story behind that. But now, sorry for interrupting with that. I felt that was important. I'm sorry. I had to mention it.
No worries.
Not the Indonesian part, the other. But yeah, answering back. While I was in Indonesia, actually, I had this major breakthrough, like a huge personal crisis. I believe that every 4 months I have this personal crisis. I'm not the same person as yesterday, of course, but I feel like I grow and I walk this roller coaster of emotions and experiences in life. And for, of course, you can relate to that. When we are outside of the country, we face so many challenges. It can be the best year of our lives, but we face many, many, many challenges. So I felt like that happened to me. And while we finished our scholarship, because we were scholars with the Chivinin scholarship, then you don't receive the stipend, right? You don't receive the money. So it's challenging. You have to start working there. Life is harder because you have to rent a place. And I remember I was like barely surviving and my mental state wasn't good. Like my mental health wasn't stable. So I realized that it was time for a change and I decided to go to Indonesia, like suddenly have my Julia Roberts experience. And my friend invited me, and also he said we could, like, you know, connect with some other institutions and maybe talk about activism and what I promote and talk in schools. So I was like, this trip will be with a purpose and I will also, like, you know, grow as I do what I love. So that's what I did. I went to Indonesia. And meanwhile, I was doing all of the things I mentioned. I found this open call for the UN that is called, this initiative is called the Youth Rights Academy. And it's so beautiful. It's the first time they implement that. It's the first cohort. I don't believe it will be the last one. So pay attention to the call for the second cohort that might be this year or quite soon. And it's beautiful because the UN is trying to implement more programs for kids and the youth, you know, because, I mean, nowadays, like, the world is facing so many challenges, but let's be real, the ones that are going to actually face those challenges, it's us, you know, the youth. So we need to be part of the conversation, and the fact that the UN and some other institutions are trying to, you know, implement these actions so that they can give us a space to talk and yeah, to talk more about our context and everything. It was amazing. So I saw this open call. And of course, as I was talking about self-sabotage earlier, I was like, ooh, this is so scary, because I felt like it was a new step. Of course, going to study a master's degree and like represent our countries, that was cool. But I felt like that was a next level. That wasn't, I don't know if I was ready to face, or maybe am I a good candidate? Like, you know, am I good enough for this? My anxiety was kicking, like it was in its peak, and almost I didn't apply. But I'm so grateful I did, and I applied. I just said who I am and what I was doing and what I believe. And they selected me not only to represent Bolivia, but also to represent the whole Latin American region and the Caribbean, which was so beautiful.
Congrats, yeah. Congrats. That's amazing.
Thank you. And, you know, it was like a bigger achievement I didn't know I was making, because Bolivia is not usually put into the map or the conversations globally, even though, like, you know, it's in the heart of South America, but not many people know what's happening right now in my country. We're facing like a huge crisis we haven't in decades. And it was nice to put that context into into the global conversations in the UN. And also I realized that there were like lots of people from many places, which was amazing. I love to connect with many people, but I realized that that wasn't like a Latin American representation for this first initiative. I know they were implementing their first action and they tried to explain me that. And I really appreciate, and I felt like really, really lucky to be there. But I was like, we need more Latin American representation. So I was like, how can I talk about each country? We're so many countries, you know, like so many countries in the Caribbean, so many countries in Central America, so many countries in South America. Like, oh my God. So, but that was huge. That was so beautiful. I connected so beautifully with people. I was like I'm speaking now myself with my bonds, with my personality, with all the purple I usually wear, just being myself at the UN, talking and representing my country. It was so beautiful, a beautiful experience. And now we are working along with the UN in this project, because a sad fact about my country is that so many institutions right now are closing and leaving my country because of the crisis and the situation. So it was good to know that I'm not alone in this, that I can connect with the Latin American region, the international institutions, and have the support of the UN to implement and expand my impact with this new project we're implementing. Was like the push I needed for the next phase in my activism and something I can do for my country, connecting it with the world now that we're sort of trying to shrink. But we won't be able to shrink, because Bolivians, we're perseverant and we grow. But that's another topic. So like that's how I got to the UN. And it was beautiful because I did, because of all this, the story I'm mentioning, and because I was being myself and trying to speak for Latin Americans as well. So, yeah.
Well, I think we had a good representation, and I'm really happy for you that you were able to. It's impressive that you're the only Latino or Latina there, and also representing such diverse region, which is Latin America. You're representing not only the Hispanic people, but you're also representing the Anglo-Saxon speaking people, the Francophonic people as well, like every bit of corner culture that we have in this diverse continent, of a subcontinent of where you were represented. And I'm really happy to know that you had this experience. And, you know, I find it interesting that you say that you were self-sabotaging yourself for the application when you got the Chimin scholarship, which the year when you applied, they were, I think it was 76,000 people, and there were only 1,400 of us that got it. That's like less than, forgive my bad maths, but I think less than the 2%. So I think I'm glad that you did convince yourself to apply. And tell me, like, what was one of your favorite moments from this experience that you had in Geneva?
Well, yeah, regarding what you mentioned, I feel like sometimes it's hard to believe. It's hard to believe. Maybe not because you don't believe in yourself, but sometimes, like, you know, not everything that your mind says is true. And because of the world fills you with so many messages, and it's so confusing that you, at some point, you mix things up and you feel like you're not enough, or maybe people are more prepared, and you question yourself. So, and jump into the pool is hard, right? And then you realize the moment you do it, because you feel proud or because people tell you. I remember, and that's where I go with my favorite moment at the UN. Well, I have two, but this is related to what we were speaking about, self-sabotaging yourself. I remember that I got the chance to speak with the High Commissioner in some of the sessions, I believe in the middle of the week, because it was like a 5-day event. And we got the chance to pretty much like ask her questions. And I remember I said that about the Latin American representation, because again, I felt honored and privileged to be there and represent the whole region. But it was like a huge pressure, you know, like it's am I prepared to even talk about my own country? Sometimes I feel so weird that I'm misrepresenting my own country because Bolivians are not like me. I mean, like, we're many diverse, you know, we come from different backgrounds, and like, how can I even represent my own country? And then like, I'm suddenly representing this huge region, which then later when I started speaking about that, people approached to me and she said, congratulations. And I was like, yeah, but I don't know. I was so hesitant about my English, by the way, because all of them normally, they have English education since they are children, but I don't. That was a privilege for me to access to education and learn English, because again, I had the privilege of, like, you know, going to institutes, practice my English and other things, or self, like, you know, teach myself and be consistent about it. So I was like, you know, oh my God, Sofia Vergara, you know, like, I remember I made so many mistakes and I was feeling ashamed, and I don't mind, honestly, to face embarrassment. But that moment I was like, I didn't do well, you know, perfectionism. And I remember one of the activists that, she wasn't actually part of a program. She was one of the, how do you say, like, the coaches, the teachers. She approached to me and she even posted me online. And she said, you don't even realize what happened just now. You don't even realize the impact and the importance for your country and what you've done. And the fact that you actually dared to speak for the whole region, that was amazing. And she actually explained to me, because they were... we were two countries, like, there was also Colombia, one Colombian that was living, a friend that was living in Qatar, and she's also Lebanese and Palestinian, but she was advocating for their world mostly, and she was part of the institution that was, like, you know, part of this program, and also the other that was part of the youth advisory board member. So that was the moment I realized I was the only Latina selected there among 6,000 people, and I was the only Bolivian who got there. I was like very shocked by what she said, and honestly, I was so proud about jumping into the pool, same as Chivining, because as you said, it was like more than 70,000 applications in the world, only 1,003 something people, and out of that there were only 4 Bolivians, and I was the only woman. So I was like, yeah, these sort of things start shocking the moment you realize that you did, but you took that first step of, like, risking to, you know, like, being ashamed or embarrassed or cringe, whatever, or like, you know, I'm not good enough, but you never know if you never try. Like, I feel like losing is not, it's not trying. And I even with fear, I feel the message is do it. Do it.
Hay que ser atrevido, as they say in Spanish.
Bold, exactly. And dare to be yourself, because that's where, like, many people fit in the requirements, but who, why you among all these people? Because many people are qualified, right? But why you? What's your story? Tell me about yourself and why this matters for you. So I feel like that's important, not only for applications, but for whatever you're going to do in life, even if it's like, you know, flirting with someone, or like, or tell that person that you admire, that, like, let's be friends, you know, these kind of things, like, do it, be bold and dare to be yourself, because that will lead you to change. And being you is revolutionary, you know?
I love that. I think it's always necessary whenever we feel a bit overwhelmed to take the next step. Remember, maybe other moments in our life where we also were in that situation and we did decide to take that first step, and it did eventually take us to where we wanted to be, or it gave us a lesson that we need. So I really appreciate that message. I think it's nice. I would just like to ask you, what's something or someone that inspires you?
Okay, I wasn't prepared for that question, but let me think. And while I think that, I forgot to answer something, but I'm trying to remember.
No worries, you have answered everything. No worries.
Oh, first of all, I want to apologize if I'm shouting. I feel like I'm shouting because of this. because I get excited, but that's a Latina thing, so you will people understand that excitement and the passion, but
that Latino passion that identifies it. Although I think I told you once when I bumped into you some was in Brighton that you're the perfect representation of the energetic Latino, because most people know us Latino as very energetic, very fun people, and I think that you're the synonym of that, because like you have a very positive energy, quite extroverted. I mean, my friends say I'm extroverted, but I think I'm no way passion, and I say that's something good. You know, I think it's good, like that friendliness, that warmness that identifies every Latin American. I think, you know, maybe it's the weather, as they say.
thank you, gracias. I feel like I mean, it's something positive, but sometimes, like, you know, people can misunderstand me and say like, why are you always happy? I'm not always happy. Like, you don't know all the effort behind that. Not effort, but like, you know, for every glow up that people see, there's a lot of inner work and resignifying your own story, your wounds, and all the emotions that we face in our roller coaster of life. But you know, I am glad that people can see my philosophy behind and what I want to share with the world. Like, once I resignify, I share that with people, because that's what I believe we need to create change. And I'm also glad, like, to hear this kind of feedback. That's something that pushes me with my activism, because I'm trying to be who I am off and in and off screen, because like, yeah, when people tell me, oh my God, I thought, like, you know, you were this fake character, like, online. But then when you know Eñame or Avril, they are like, oh my God, you have the same energy. I'm glad, but oh my God, okay, you're real. Like, you know, and I like that. And thank you also, because it's a compliment. It's a beautiful compliment about saying that. You know what people used to call me in Sussex? Like, oh, they would call me Bolivian Shakira, the Purple Queen, or Duracell. Duracell.
Well, I mean, because of the battery.
Yes. Yeah, we have like this battery brand that is called Duracell, and it has like a bunny, and it's like, you're like the bunny from Duracell, you're Duracell. And like, and they were complaining, actually, when they told me that, the Latinos, they would tell me, yeah, Jose and the gang, you know, like they used to tell me, like, you know, girl, you're reinforcing this huge stereotype of the Latin Americans that are like, you know, they never run out of battery. But please, yeah, we are not in the position to reach your standard. Can you understand us? Can you be considerate to us? And I was like, I'm sorry. I'm just hyperactive and I'm doing lots of stuff.
It's like you're draining their energy, basically.
Yeah. I'm feeding with their energy, you know, like.
I mean, that's why you're used to the salsa, I guess, because it helps to just channel the energy that you're feeling.
I used to do lots of things. I was like in many societies at uni. I used to have FOMO, by the way, at the beginning, and anxiety as well. It's not always good to be everywhere, but that's how I met a lot of people, and I'm a good networker, which, by the way, with that one I will reply to your question. So yeah, I don't think right now I have like a specific person where I can say I got the inspiration from, but it wouldn't be fair to say it's just a person. Like, networking, which actually means connecting with people, having genuine relationships. Sometimes the word is too difficult to understand, but that's pretty much that. The fact that I've been connecting so genuinely and authentically with people around me, like, you know, my entire life, you know, my friends in high school, like in university, in some different activities, in activism, global leaders like you, or random people I meet on the streets or traveling, they all have taught me so many things and generated so much empathy and shape what I do in my day-to-day life and my activism. that I feel so inspired with these realities, because I believe that, like, you know, concepts and knowledge is shaped by that, by those conversations, by those connections, and the fact that you know the story behind that person, the background, what is happening, what is the person facing, what is happening in their own countries or situations. Like, there are so many things to know, to connect with these, you know, that creates this powerful inspiration in me, and that I can channelize that and resignify that and share it with the world as well. So, like, I feel inspired with these people, and that's something also, like, another favorite moment I had at the UN, because you don't know how powerful it can be connecting and just telling your truth and your own story. And I remember there was at this point during a mental health session that I spoke about that, how I keep up my emotional and mental health along with the activism, because being an activist is very challenging. Yeah, it's very draining, and facing huge cases that are very unfair, that sometimes law can't protect you. You can't find justice because of that, because it's only papers and people don't do their jobs. There's not justice in that. How do you resignify that? So I remember I replied to that question by telling my own story, because I've also faced many injustice cases in life, but that I wouldn't want anyone to happen that in normal life, not even my enemies. But the fact that I was able to reply with love and tenderness and to say, you know, like, this is my story, and the fact of naming that made that after the session, many friends or many future friends would approach to me and say, thank you for saying that. That also happened to me. And creating these networks of change. And in this case, I call it Sisters of Change, because for me, it has always been, since I'm in this feminist path, it has always been about connecting with women, because we can resonate. We can come from different backgrounds, as I said, like from all over the world, but we always connect with people, with situations that generate this empathy with our context. Religion can be different, you know, ages can be different, languages can be different, but we face so many inequalities and cases of violence that we can resonate. And the fact that I name it, another person could approach to me and ask me, can you help me? And that's so powerful. And for me, that was another huge moment of me being at the UN, because it wasn't only about me. And naming things, telling your story out loud, can change another person's perspective or life, even that, you know, because they ask you for resources, or they ask you just like, you know, how can I do this? How do you do this? Or like, thank you for saying that. And you bond with people, even with your own traumas, you know? So like, it was beautiful to me to witness and see how this sisterhood of change, these networks of change are created in many spaces, not only in the UN, in all the spaces I've had the privilege to be. And that's so beautiful. And that's also inspiring for me. So I'm inspired by the people I meet and the genuine connections I made with these beautiful humans and souls worldwide.
I think you're also an inspiration for others as well. And just as others inspire you, I'm pretty sure there's many out there that are listening to your story, some listening to this podcast as well, and they are also being inspired. And as we are almost coming to the ending part of this podcast, there is a segment that we have on this podcast where I always ask our guests to share some fact that maybe most people don't know about your country. It's called a Cross Tide Spotlight. So you're from Bolivia, of course, South America. Hope to visit someday. So
yes, please.
What can you tell us about Bolivia?
All right. Well, there's a lot of information about Bolivia, but since this is a worldwide podcast, like crossing borders, not many people know, or probably they don't know, that Bolivia is one of the most biodiverse countries in the world. I believe it's in the top 15 in the world because of many areas, like, you know, wildlife. I believe we are fourth in the world for birds, also fifth in the world. I might be mistaken about that, but about amphibians. There's also like the biggest salt flat in the world is called Salar de Uyuni. And it's so beautiful because when it rains, it's like walking on heaven or on the clouds. It's so beautiful because you see the reflection of the sky and it's amazing. And it's made of salt. It's like a big sea of salt. It's so beautiful. That's like number one destination. And it's been recommended as the first one in the world this year by the BBC, by the way. And it's so beautiful, but we don't only have that. We have, like, you know, the jungle, we have the Amazon, we have the Chaco region. Like, it's not only the Andes, but also like the Andes has so beautiful places. We have the highest lake in the world that we share with our neighbor Peru and Bolivia, by the way. For those that don't know, it's located in the middle, in the heart of South America, between pretty much every country in the region. But yeah, Brazil, Peru, Argentina, Chile. And what else I can say? We have 36 ethnic languages. And of course, like the 37 would be Spanish, but all of them are official languages. What else I can say? Oh, that a weird fact is that we are a landlocked country, but we do have navy. Yeah, so that's a weird fact about us. And we have navy that operates in the big lake and the rivers, but because we do have the hope to get access to the sea again. That's a weird fact about us. What else? We have pink dolphins. In the rivers of the Amazon region. We have the Chiquitania rainforest, and the Misiones Jesuiticas that we share with Paraguay are still intact. I believe that's not the case of Paraguay, by the way, but yeah, and the region that speak Guarani, and that's my region, even though I'm from the other part of the country. I was born in the western side of the country, like the Andes, and then I was raised my whole life since I was 5 years years old, in the tropical region where the jungle and the rainforest is. So I'm pretty much like a huge intersection of that. And I can talk hours about the beauty of and diversity of my country, but it's good to mention now that you're giving me the chance and space to talk about what's happening in my country as well, which is also important for the world to know that right now Bolivia is facing like a huge, huge political, economic, and environmental crisis. And we don't have fuel, we don't have dollars. Many people are queuing not only for those resources, but also for basic goods. So many things are happening. Elections are pretty much in two days. I don't know when this episode of the podcast will be launched, but so many things are going to be shaky for us. Not because I want to, you know, say something negative about my country, but people need to know what is happening. For 20 years, we've been like having the same party. That right now we're facing many challenges, and there's not even one female candidate for being a president. There's not even one proposal for all the people that are the authorities or the candidate, the male candidates that are, you know, like are going to be elected. We don't even know who is going to be elected. We are so confused about that. But there are movements like women, LGBTQ groups, and other young people and creators that are creating like this beautiful movement campaigns to talk about the beauty about Bolivia, why my people, they don't surrender. They are these huge initiatives for us to be more democratic about the elections, and we can do something, you know, like regardless the authorities that we get, because they have these old ideas about life and maybe new propositions about sexual education, gender violence prevention. These are topics that are necessary for the agenda, and that sadly, they are in paper, but they are not being implemented. And all these people claim to be, like, you know, protecting the environment, but just to mention, last year we faced a huge crisis about my region burning for 5 months, 4 to 5 consecutive months. We lost 2.5 million of hectares in, of the lungs of the world, because this also involves, like, you know, Brazil, Paraguay, Peru, Colombia, the Amazon region, in all of those places. But nobody talked about what was happening in Bolivia and my region. It was like the third country in the world that was more contaminated in that year, and we believe, like, you know, we're the lungs of the world, but people don't know these kind of things. And the authorities, they claim to be, you know, like worshiping the Pachamama, which is Mother Earth, but then suddenly they are allowing this to happen. So I say this also because people deserve to know what is happening in Bolivia. It's not that we're going to surrender, but institutions are leaving my country, and we need the support of everyone, not only the Latin American regions, because we're all brothers and sisters. And please pay attention to what's happening in Bolivia. So many things are happening in the world. I know it's difficult to keep up with this rhythm and all the things that are happening, but let's try to create solutions and help each other the way we can. That's why I speak about this. And come and visit my country, support us with tourism. We have so many beautiful people and places and animals and plants and everything. You're going to have the best adventure ever. Please come and support us. I know we can do so many things about changing the world. And we are, especially the youth generation. I believe in us and the change we're creating from Bolivia to the world. But I want you to know this side as well. So, yeah, sorry for taking the mic so much.
No worries. And thank you very much, Abril, for sharing those facts about your country. Indeed, Bolivia is definitely a very interesting and beautiful country with so much diversity. And I hope that everything in the coming years can come for the better, and everything as people want it to be, of course. And all that's left for me to say, I'm so glad that we had this conversation. I'm so happy that I had you here on this show. As I told you when we were texting a few days ago, I was meaning to reach out a very long time ago for to have you here on this on the podcast. And I'm really glad that you took a bit of your time to speak here with us, to share a bit about the work you're doing, and of course that message that I'm pretty sure is inspiring and is going to inspire more people. So I don't know if you would like to say something before we wrap this up.
Well, first of all, thank you so much. Muchas gracias for having me here, because it's good to, like, you know, create spaces for us, for our context. So the fact that you're doing this has a bigger echo. So keep doing it. Congratulations for this initiative. It's so beautiful. Thank you for allowing me to show all of this, to talk about these topics in English. It's the first time that I've been interviewed on a podcast that is crossing borders, and it's in English. Thank you so much. There are so many more projects coming. That's what I can say. Spoiler alert. And please support. Your podcast, Cross Tides, support people, please share, and also visit me in Revolución en Ñame if you want to know more about me, my content, and soon English content as well. So thank you so much.
Excellent.
And, and be yourself, dare to be yourself, because that's revolutionary. Yummy.
Thank you very much, Abril, once more. Very inspiring words, and hope to have you future on the podcast to talk about future project. And thank you to everyone that have been in tune with us. Remember that you can listen to us on your favorite streaming platform. We are on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, we're on YouTube, we are all all of the streaming platforms and name it. Also, remember to follow us on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Facebook. Find us as Cross Tides Podcast. This was Jeremy Tower here with Abril and Yame. I will be until the
Yes.
next episode. Take care, everybody.